Hello, and welcome to episode 71 of Blast Processing, the official podcast of PixelVerdict.com. I'm your host, Steve, and with me are my Canadian compadres. I've got Adam.
Hello.
And I've got John.
Wooshy, wooshy.
We did this podcast once already, but due to some cat-related technical difficulties, we only recorded about 8 minutes of it. So this is take two.
We are the only game site that has cat-related anything.
Yeah, it's my fault. The Orson Welles of cats tried to get into my lap mid-recording and, well, you know, did bad things to my laptop. he's wandering around looking for me, wondering where my voice is coming from.
Wondering where your laptop is so we can step on it again.
It's not going to happen.
Cat-related technical difficulties.
We'll kick it off with the usual fashion, what we've been playing this week. Adam, because I feel like it, you can go first.
Well, thank you. I've been playing Dragon Quest IX.
Dragon Warrior IX.
No. That's not what it's called.
Dragon Warrior IX.
It could be called both, I guess, if you want to be technical about it, I guess.
What's more masculine? You know, we're going on a quest, or I'm a warrior. The ultimate warrior.
The ultimate warrior. I would play that game.
The Dragon Ultimate Warrior 9.
I have the ancestors in me.
He was a creepy guy, man.
And then Ricky Steamboat can run out and breathe fire.
It's great. I've been playing it, and then I leveled up, and I got the Gorilla Slam. So the Gorilla Press. That's the move.
Is there a Camel Punch?
I certainly hope not.
I think a Camel Punch would be awesome.
Have you gotten to the part yet where Papa Shango curses you and you start puking up green bile all over yourself? Or the part when you're stabbed in the back by Macho King Randy Savage and he costs you the world championship?
Look, there are certain things in professional wrestling that are best left to the late 80s and the early 90s. Papa Shango and Doink the Clown are two of those things.
Man, I don't even know what you guys are talking about anymore.
there's an ugly subculture of 90s wrestling that's best forgotten.
I vaguely remember some guy who wore sunglasses with radiation symbols on him or something.
That was Adam Bomb.
That was Adam Bomb. That's exactly who that was.
See, the last time I dedicated myself to WWE, like Nikolai Volkov and the Iron Sheik were still wrestling, so.
Pretty sure Adam Bomb hailed from Three Mile Island.
Oh.
Because that's the weird thing about wrestling. It's like, you take a guy like The Undertaker, who's like a badass biker on a motorcycle now, which is cool and fine and all well to do, and you kind of forget that he kind of came in as an undead guy, literally coming out of coffins. So, it was weird.
That's kind of cool, though.
He had a career transition. It's worked for him.
I suppose, yeah. Well, instead of being undead, he's now a biker.
Well, it kind of took the drama out of it because, you know, you could never best him in a match on account of him being dead.
Being a zombie.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ah, well, that makes sense. What were we talking about? Where am I?
No, Steve, it doesn't make any sense. That's the problem. Weren't you listening?
So Adam, you were still
talking about wrestling.
You were playing Super WrestleMania the weekend, so.
No,
but I really want to now.
He was playing Dragon Quest IX.
I was playing Dragon Quest IX. Let's talk about Dragon Quest IX. It's good, and for some unknown reason, that is truncated now because of a cat. I know that Steve played it as well.
I did. I did play some Dragon Quest IX, and I thought it was okay. I thought, like, technically it was a pretty awesome game for a DS and stuff, but I thought it lacked a little in the, you know, the RPG fundamentals department, I guess. You know, there wasn't really much storyline going on, and what was there was all this stuff about angels, and and people with wings who look like little cherubims or whatever you call them. You know, it was kind
of. Was there a tree of life in there?
There was a tree of life, you know. Yeah, there was this, you know, and the souls of mortals and stuff, and that was a little bit of a turn off for me. That was, you know, I don't know. I just it kind of
so like
shied me away from it.
Third tier anime storyline.
Yeah, probably. I guess. Yeah. Well, I guess if you could call it a storyline.
Now here's the question I had. I know in this one, instead of really having a colorful selection of supporting characters, the rest of your party are all like computer created, just stand characters are just thrown in there if you're not playing with other players to take their place.
That's correct.
How does that affect the story progression? Do you?
So far, not.
Do you miss Yangus in this game? Do you miss the? What were we talking about last night? The girl, the Scottish girl who didn't pronounce H's.
Yeah, no. You don't. It took a bit of adjusting because I couldn't quite figure out why I hadn't recruited anybody yet. And turns out you just make them out of generic cookie cutter parts. But you get a lot of the character interaction through NPCs that you quest for and hang out with you. It's kind of like one of those, you go to one town and the dude comes along with you for the ride and adds color commentary while you fight a giant Medusa creature. And then you go to another town and some other guy comes along with you and provides color commentary the whole way.
That's kind of cool, I guess.
Well, it's, you know, it's a different way of doing it. I haven't found it lacking so far. Really, it's not that much different than, you know, that old school style of Japanese RPG where, you know, the main hero, whose name was Hiro, didn't have any dialogue whatsoever in the game, and people just talked to him in this one-sided conversation.
His name was Hiro Protagonist.
Right, exactly. And it was just like, oh, thanks for coming. Will you destroy the dragon? Thanks for destroying the dragon. And you're like, I didn't say anything. But
don't forget to hold the reset button as you press the power button.
Yeah. So it's...
remember, save early and save often.
So not having any, you know, perspective from your party is a little strange at first, but it doesn't really detract from the gameplay, and it's just good old-fashioned RPG fun.
You know, in the last 24 hours, I remember that I hold a horrible grudge against that series.
Really?
That dates way back to the first one, way back to the original Dragon Warrior on NES. It's a grudge that I will likely carry to my grave.
What started this grudge?
When you
what,
first
what fired you... the bullet that started the war between Steve Power and Dragon Warrior?
Okay, see, Dragon Warrior, I think it's just as well to say there may have been an Ultima game before it. I'm not really sure, but it's just like, for the sake of arguing, let's just say it was the first console RPG. You know, it was the first time a role-playing game ever appeared on console.
I'd say for most gamers of that generation, it probably was their first RPG.
Yeah, and you fire it up, and the first thing the game asks you to do is enter your name. So I'm like, okay, I'll enter my name.
You know. Were you Stev? Was the problem here?
No. I could actually fit my whole name in, and of course I was
Thrill like, House.
No, I don't even remember how old I was when I first played Dragon Warrior. You know what? I wasn't. I mean, I wasn't yet a teenager. You know, not quite a boy, but not quite a man. You know, and I entered
story
my,
of my
I
life.
Entered, I entered Stephen, Stephen, because you know that's what Mama always called me. So you know that's what I put in. And for the rest of the goddamn game, every asshole that I ran into was calling me Sir Stephen. I was like, this is the worst shit ever. I don't even have a cool fantasy sounding name.
It was personalized. It was like those books you got when you were kids that had your name in them.
I never had one of those.
Oh, you missed out. You missed out on the
You didn't have adventures with mermaids or anything.
I did have like a Transformers Choose Your Own Adventure book.
That was probably pretty sweet.
But my name wasn't in it.
How do we know it was yours then?
Well, I had it written on the inside cover in case anybody took it, so I'd know.
Ah.
But yeah, that always really bugged the hell out of me about Dragon Warrior. I felt so tricked, you know? Because even back then, I was a little fantasy geek. I mean, I'd already read, you know, Dragons of Autumn Twilight at that point. So, you know, I was already playing Dungeons and Dragons. So You know, I felt so cheated. It's like I couldn't even give my guy a cool fantasy name because this game asked me what my name was, and all of a sudden, oh, you know, it's a role-playing game, and I'm not even role-playing. I'm just myself, and I'm beating up slimes. That's no fun.
Well, I was one of the kids who got Dragon Warrior with my subscription to Nintendo Power.
Yep.
And I can always remember, this was my absolute first RPG, and I can... You know, I always get a little bit upset because my cousins were much better at it than I was. You know, so I went out, and I was probably about 8 years old at this point. And at the tender age of eight, this is when I discovered the art of grinding in an RPG. And I basically walked back and forth between about six or seven tiles on the game overworld and fought the exact same monsters over and over again, not realizing that I could use the gold I was picking up. Every time, you know, thou hast succeeded in defeating the blue slime. I didn't realize I could take that gold and go buy better weapons and better armor. And I think I got myself up to about level 13 with the bamboo stick that the king gave you when he sent you out to kill the dragon lord. You know, kill this heinous villain and save my kingdom. And, oh, here's a reed of bamboo to do it.
Hmm.
And I can still remember to this day, earlier on during that grinding, if you stepped off of like the grass tiles and into the forest, instead of fighting blue slimes and bats, all of a sudden, you know, you stay out of the woods because they got dragons and werewolves.
Yep.
Now, Final Fantasy kind of pulled that crap too.
Yeah.
The original Final Fantasy.
God forbid you go near the mountains.
Oh, the mountains. All of a sudden, men made of gold come and attack you.
And I remember there was the poison tiles, and the I believe there was one. It was like I was wondering what it was doing in the middle of a castle. There's something that looked like you were stepping on a floor made of razor blades.
Yeah, I remember.
I don't.
Was a fun little game.
I enjoyed Dragon Warrior.
I like this one because of it reminds me of it, you know. The monster designs are all very much in the same style. They've just recycled those poor slimes and those poor wyverns and those poor, you know, ridiculous creatures again and again and again.
It's all in the Sega nostalgia or something.
Yeah, it's nice. It's I'm not going to claim that it's the best RPG, or that, you know, Steve, your criticism is completely valid. The plot is, you know, now that I'm a little further into it again than I was yesterday, I'm kind of... I'm waiting for it. Any minute now, there's a plot, but it's nice. It's familiar. It's you know, Japanese RPG grinding that's... You don't really have to think about too much.
It's comfortable.
Yeah, it is. And it's nice. It's a good summer game for me.
I don't know. I wanted to like it, I think, more than I actually did was my problem. You know, I brought it home and I played it for a few hours. I got to, you know, where all the crap hits the fan. I ended up on planet Earth and all of this stuff. And I just, there was nothing there really to propel me forward.
Was it hard times on planet Earth?
No. No, it definitely was not.
fast times on planet Earth?
Fast times on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. Damn it, now I got Phoebe Cates in my head now, or Phoebe Cates in my head now. Thanks. Well, I mean, genuinely, thanks for that, Adam.
Does it make the podcast go a lot better?
It's all warm and fuzzy. But no, it's, yeah, you know, I may come back to it. I may give it a try down the road again, but as of now, I'm just kind of, I think I'm going to walk away. I think I'll leave Dragon Quest IX on the shelf. What about you, John? What have you been playing?
Well, in order to get myself in the mood for Dragon Quest IX, I actually sat down with Dragon Quest VIII for a little bit. And but we've been talking about Dragon Quest for the past 15, 16 minutes, so we're just going to say I played Dragon Quest VIII. we'll leave right at that.
Which I actually did enjoy considerably more than Dragon Quest IX, other than the really borked save system.
Would you like to talk a little bit about that save system?
It just kind of didn't save when you thought it did, and you find yourself losing hours and hours of progress. You know, I sat down three times with that game thinking that I had saved my game, only to have to start a new game.
So
it's kind of like Dead Rising that way.
Look, you've had 8 games to practice holding the reset button down. What's the problem?
Yeah, when I'm talking to the king, I should be holding the reset button down.
What is the problem?
He even tells you to do it. When a king tells you to put your finger on that reset button, you better do it.
And what That's the right. hell was the deal with that, man? I had to traipse all across the goddamn country and go back to talk to the king whenever I wanted to save my game. But in Final Fantasy, I could just walk to the nearest inn or use a tent.
Or, you know, take out your sleeping bag in the middle of the desert.
Yeah. What was up with that?
It's an old game. What do you want me to say? It's old.
It came from
another country. What do you want me to say?
It could have been worse. It could have had like 40 character passwords that you had to write down.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know...
It doesn't have the sophisticated save system of, say, Mega Man 2, where it's colored spheres. But, you know, it's...
Well, and, you
or,
know, like those
blue and red password dots.
or River City Ransom, where it's like a hexadecimal password, 128
yeah,
characters.
Exactly. And that's what I'm talking about. And, you know, like someone, like, I don't know, your stupid wife comes along and lays a glass of cold water on the piece of paper that you've got your Simon's Quest password written on, and you can't read the last 2 digits of the 40 digit passcode, and you can't reload your game right before you're about to fight Dracula.
The only thing I ever remember from Simon's Quest, besides that night with the glass of water, which was hilarious, when getting that gem and having to go over to a wall and having to, you had to duck next to the wall for the tornado to come and pick you up. And I don't think there was any mention of it in the game besides that, outside of maybe some villager in one of the, you go into one of the villages right at the start of the game and go up to talk to somebody. He's like, "Yo, G, duck for tornadoes."
Duck for tornadoes.
Duck for tornadoes. That's going to be the name of this episode.
I don't know.
It's going to be a picture of Uncle Scrooge jumping into a tornado.
No, that's a podcast topic in of itself. Is just bizarre, stupid ass save systems over the years.
Yeah, and that's a bad one.
The problem is, by the end of it, is that we'd spend half an hour talking about it. And by the end of it, we'd be like, "God damn it!" We'd just be angry at all the games.
And then when it was all over, I'd be like, "Guys, we got to do it again because I forgot to save the recorded file."
Teeth marks in the laptop.
No, let's not.
Okay. So anyway, that's what I've been playing.
What about you, John? You anything other than Dragon Quest VIII?
Yeah, it's been I think we've hit a little tiny bit of a dry spell now with at this point in the summer for games. So I decided to go back, you know, put a couple more hours into Darksiders. And I actually decided, after having it loaned out for the better part of a year and totally forgetting what I was doing in the game, I started over Arkham Asylum today.
Oh.
And let me just say that even now, the inverted takedown never gets old.
That was a great game.
I've even, like, when my house is eventually built, I'm planning on hanging upside down from the top of the stairs and just saying I'm Batman to anyone who walks past me. And then trying to lift him off the ground and probably falling down.
You see, what will happen is if you hang upside down for that long, all the blood will rush to your head and you'll pass out.
It never happens to Batman.
I suppose.
Well, not Michael Keaton, the real Batman.
He's got conditioning. That's what it is. He's conditioned.
Condition.
Yeah, he's practiced that hanging upside down shit. He's good at that.
He studied under the Eastern Masters of hanging upside down.
That's right.
The War Masters taught him the deepest secrets.
That's what they cut out of the Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah.
20-minute hanging upside down.
Liam Neeson showing him how to hang his ankles in a tree.
You must learn how to hang upside down if you're going to lead these men to Gotham.
What do you want me to lead these men to Gotham?
Oh my god, Batman's on the podcast. Best podcast ever.
Batman, is that you?
Yeah, we totally got to bring up the whole the Batman thing we were talking about last night later on in the podcast.
Okay.
I gotta remember to bring that up because that was gold.
I don't even remember. Man, we did a podcast last night.
I don't remember talking about Batman. What podcast was this?
Oh, I totally do.
Was this the one that you had like after you'd gone to sleep or something? Or
no, this is when we were talking about Red Dead Redemption. I was talking about the greatest Grand Theft Auto game of all time. You'd be going around doing your criminal things, you know, beating up hookers, oh, yeah, stealing money, and being Adam Arsenault and having your garage so filled up with dead hooker bodies that you couldn't get your car inside. But when the sun went down the city, you suddenly had to worry about Batman finding you.
It's true.
So instead of your six stars showing them, the army coming after you, six stars showed up and Commissioner Gordon pressed the button on the red phone.
It is funny.
Face
and
the Degora, Batman.
It's funny and true in that we did talk about it, and my garage is full of dead hookers.
And it'd probably be the greatest game ever.
It would be. Actually, it would be a lot of fun trying to be the criminal element avoiding Batman.
Awesome. Well,
like one of those old Atari games where you're supposed to get away from Leatherface.
What?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, see, you guys aren't nearly as hardcore as me.
No, that's what it is. That must be it.
What a noob.
Was it Yar's Revenge? Otherwise, I don't really know.
You had to escape from Leatherhead in Yar's Revenge?
No, there's the really crappy Texas Chainsaw Massacre game.
You know what? They made a video game out of Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Yes.
In the age of the Atari?
Yes, and you were running away from what I suppose it was. I assume it was supposed to be Leatherface. It just looked like a big green man with a giant green. It was supposed to be a chainsaw, but it looked like his dick.
Play Texas Chainsaw Massacre on your Atari 2600. Fun for the whole family.
Only based for on the, Atari.
Based on the description of that game, it could have been E.T.
Oh. Nothing on the Atari was fun for the whole family. Nothing.
Yar's Revenge was a great game, only in that I had no idea what it was about.
I have fond memories of Choplifter, but I don't know, when the Atari 2600 was out, I don't even know if I was capable of pooping in a toilet at this point.
This was 1997, John.
See, it's good that you can use that as a chronological benchmark, because I can't.
Yeah, I don't have that kind of memory either.
This being a skill I learned a couple months ago, I really, you know, it doesn't really do me any good.
Steve, what have you been playing?
I did finally put the finishing touches on Mass Effect 2.
Oh.
Which was pretty awesome. It was pretty cool. I will say I don't think it lived up to the first one. And I will also say that the setup for the third was a little weak. I kind of, you know, when the final scene played out, I kind of expected the Halo music to start playing. It really was more of a third-person shooter with light RPG elements than the original Mass Effect was. I mean, the original Mass Effect was definitely hardcore RPG. But, you know, overall, it was a solid, in terms of mechanics and stuff, it was definitely an improvement on the first game. It was a gorgeous-looking game. I'd probably say it's the nicest-looking game on the 360. And for the most part, the storyline was pretty damn awesome, even though for about half the game, you're just kind of building your team. But the focus was kind of taken off narrative and kind of put more on character depth. And man, there are some great characters in that game. Like all the characters were really well fleshed out. And you know, they all had some kind of a hook to get you interested in them, you know, from Thane's just simple badass assassin shtick to Grunt and his whole, you know, I was bred in a tank, so the rest of my Krogan allies don't want me, but I'm going to earn my place anyway type of thing. You know, like, there was a lot of cool little stuff like that going on in it. And I did kind of, like, I attempted basically to crack the game wide open before I went into the end game. And spoiler alert.
Yeah, I don't want to hear this.
I did lose a few characters during the end game that kind of broke my heart.
Terrible.
You know, I thought I had everything tied up in a neat package. I thought I did everything that was supposed to be done to prevent this from happening. And, you know, when the first guy died, I was kind of like, oh, well, who cares? But then the second one, it just, like, tore my heart out. It was like, oh, no.
That's a BioWare game for you, though.
Yeah.
I mean, was there a way to beat Dragon Age without losing significant amounts of people everywhere?
I'm not really sure.
I mean, I tried it in a couple different combinations.
I think
every time it got worse. Every time more people were dead by the end of it.
I think
so. So your Dragon Age experience was like 12 monkeys.
Yeah, kind of. It was like.
I think mine went about as well as it could. You know, my Dragon Age went pretty well.
It was like there's a balance act between amount of dead people and your romantic afterlife.
Yeah, I guess.
It's like I had the most amount of people surviving, and then my girlfriend basically broke up with me.
But then, you know, I was talking to a few of my regulars today, and was just talking about, you know, like how my end game went. And these guys, of course, being having more free time and no children, you know, kind of had the game finished months ago or weeks ago or whatever. But we were talking about all the different stuff that can happen to you in this game, man, and like the different things you can witness just out of the blue, and the amount of like seemingly insignificant choices that you make in the game. And I'm talking insignificant stuff. I'm talking like, you know, stuff that you would never think when it hits you that, okay, this is a life-altering, game-changing decision that I'm going to make right now. Not, you know, like, am I going to have coffee with cream or coffee with milk? This is the kind of decision we're talking about, but it leads to these, you know, crazy serious ramifications down the line, or like a completely different thread that you did not see coming. And it's just, that makes me want to go back, fire up the game, and just keep going with it. That makes me want to reload an earlier save and just kind of see where it takes me.
So let it be known, Dragon Age players, if you're milking your coffee, you do not get to hit that redheaded French girl.
That's right. You know, if you choose, you know, like a honey cruller instead of a Boston cream donut, it's a redheaded
French girl. That Orlesian ass, it will not be tapped.
No.
No, that it reminds me of like really, really, really old, you know, text entry adventure games on the computer.
Oh, like Rogue or something.
remember like the old Sierra games, like King's Quest?
Or Zork.
Well, Zork was pretty brutal, yeah. where these, like, they'd be like, you're walking around and, oh, as it turned out, you didn't pick up that, you know, tea cozy in the first window.
Yeah.
You get all the way to the end game where you're fighting the dragon. As it turns out, you can't beat the game because you didn't do the one thing and you just die.
You needed that tea cozy to use like an oven mitt so you could pick up the red hot poker and stab the dragon with it or something, you know?
And it isn't a matter of getting a bad ending or a good ending. It's a matter of you've lost the game.
Yeah,
restart.
Game over, bitches.
Yeah. I mean, it was unforgiving, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
I really, you know, and I mean, thank God we don't see that kind of game design in this day and age very often. But you know, like a real game-breaking decision like that is always a kick in the ass, you know.
Oh, you mean like making you have to pay for your continues in Maximo?
Yeah, something like that, you know, or you know, like the fact that in Resident Evil Code Veronica you could squander all your ammo in the first half of the game, thus totally boning yourself for the second half.
I don't know. I mean, there's something to be said that, you know, games are too linear and too easy now, that they hold your hand all the way through, and, you know, like Navi in the Zelda game.
Listen!
That Navi no longer appears in the game because it's coded into the game.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean? You know, like it's kind of gotten to the point that, and I hate to say it because I always love these things, but the instruction manual is completely obsolete.
I can't even remember the last time I opened one.
Like, you know, every time you start a game now, the game itself tells you how to play it in the first, you know, depending on the complexity, between the first 5 minutes and the first hour.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
That's essentially all the origin stories were in Dragon Age, was a tutorial. You know, this is how you play our game. Have fun.
Yeah, pretty much. That kind of hand-holding is kind of like, I don't know. There's something to be said for that old brutal style of gameplay.
You know, and like sometimes these tutorial levels, sometimes they're really clever about it, and other times they're just like, what? You know, I keep
we're still unpacking at the Croft Mansion, so there's a lot of boxes for Lara to climb and jump off.
No, I'm not sure. You know, the original Splinter Cell. Sam Fisher, the most elite special agent on the planet, who's got 15 years of anti-terrorist experience, has done all kinds of black ops in, you know, he was in Thailand and Laos and China and did two tours in Vietnam and got the Congressional Medal of whatever. Hey, Sam, welcome back to Third Echelon. Let's see you run the obstacle course. You know,
like, instead of like having the nice clever flashback to Laos and red China and
yeah,
you know, hey, hey, Snake, now that we've sent you into the complex to destroy the nuclear weapon machine, let's teach you how to walk forward.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know?
Now that you're there. Yeah, right.
It is ridiculous. It's gotten to the point that it's just like, you know, and like Halo 2 was a bad one too. You fire up Halo 2 for the first time and it's like, Chief, we got you in some new armor. Look up. Now look down. Now look left and right. You know, it's like, what?
Look at your man. Look at me.
Now I'll play that game
in Halo 1. I mean, how many people fire up a first person shooter not knowing how to play it?
My favorite example was Wed on PS3. You're three levels into the game when they throw the tutorial at you. You've just started level 3 and all of a sudden now you've got to run an obstacle course around her airplane graveyard house.
I don't really remember it, but I did.
You're probably better off for that.
I do remember playing it. But then on the flip side, you get stuff like Darksiders. Darksiders was actually pretty cool in how they did it. You know, they just give you a completely powered up war. And, you know, they set you loose with all your abilities and stuff at the beginning of the game and then take them from you.
Or some
of
the Spider-Man...
Instead of Navi, they give you Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Or like some of the Spider-Man games on the PS2. At least you were told how to play the game by Bruce Campbell.
Yeah. Hey, kid, come on now. Jump off this roof. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know? Wow, you
could
suck.
Could be worse, you know?
Yeah. I think it was Ultimate Spider-Man. It was actually kind of cool. It was another one of my pet peeves is the double jump. I hate that. Like, double jumps, why not just make the jump higher? You know?
Why would Spider-Man have the double jump? Spider-Man, yeah, like...
He's got webs.
Joy anyway.
But Parker actually says it. You know, you leap off a house, and Peter Parker narrates the first, like, minute or two of the game, and he actually tells you all the controls, and it's like, okay, press X to jump. Press X to do it again while in the air to do a double jump. Hey, I know it defies the laws of physics, but, you know.
So do most things I do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go.
I have more of a... It's weird that I have more of a problem with the double jump mechanism in a Spider-Man game than Spider-Man swinging on webs that are attached to nothing. Like,
this
you're in the
true.
Middle of a park.
This is
there's
true.
No buildings, dude, anywhere.
It's like the old 60s cartoon. If you look up far enough in the sky, you assume it's like Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow up there, and he's hitting airplanes.
Zeppelins.
Yeah.
Big dirigibles. Spider-Man's set in the steampunk world. He didn't know that?
That actually explains a lot.
Now the entire clone saga makes sense.
Oh. But yeah, so Mass Effect 2. I don't know how it got onto tutorials, but hey, why not, you know?
That was a pleasant diversion, actually.
It was good. I liked it. That's pretty much all I've been playing. I did play a little bit more Singularity, which I'm still enjoying, and still reminds me a lot of Bioshock. And I did find one of the coolest Easter eggs ever when I stumbled onto the donkey room from Lost. That was pretty cool. The donkey wheel, you know, underneath the island.
Did they give you a sweet trophy or achievement when you landed?
There was, and the descriptive text for us was, will they ever explain this damn thing or something to that nature? It was pretty cool.
Turns out the answer is no.
No, they won't. Sorry. But yeah, no, I'm enjoying Singularity. That's pretty fun. And I dug out my PSP this morning for a little while and was playing a little bit more Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker. And that's really fun too, man. Just the fact that they've gotten kind of Metal Gear Solid 4-ish controls and gameplay to work on that system is pretty astounding.
Very nice.
It's probably the nicest controlling, you know, traditional 3D style game I've played on the system, which is a nice breath of fresh air, because I always kind of found a few of the games, like even Resistance, which got crazy reviews and everybody loved, I found it really hard to play. I guess just without that dual analog, man, it's a chore in a lot of cases. But Resistance, it was kind of, I couldn't play the game because of it. But with Metal Gear, I gotta say, with Peace Walker, they really pulled it off. They did a great job. It feels totally natural.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's on my list. I gotta get to that at some point.
Yeah, I don't break out the PSP all that often, but
yeah. Oh my!
You say you have a huge massive something before I cut you off.
Yes. Let's agree with that. As long as there's absolutely no follow up to that statement, yes. No, I'm sitting here. You got me thinking about like my queue of games to play. You know?
I gotcha.
Oh, there's way
Your
too many.
gaming docket?
Yeah, it's. I'm really behind.
It happens. It happens.
Yep.
I was talking with like one of the guys at our other store today, and we were both kind of talking about the list we have, and he's like, basically he has vowed to himself he is not buying another game until this list of 25 that he has been completed. Like when he's finished all 25 of these games, then he will go out and buy another game. And I was like, Ken, but you realize by the time you finish this 25 games, there'll be 125 for you to catch up on.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, as you're telling me the story, there's a game in your hand and you're checking it out right now. He's like, what? No.
You can't win, my friend.
It's an impossibility, you know? I buy a lot of stuff and I do shelve a lot of stuff, but I always try to have at least like two at a time that I'm playing through. And then, you know, when I get those two done, I move on. And the other side of it, you know, I treat my game collection like I treat a movie collection. I sit down in the evenings and I'm like, what am I in the mood for tonight? Am I in the mood for some racing? Am I in the mood for something, an old favorite? Am I in the mood for, you know, RPG? What do I want to play this evening, you know?
Yeah.
I like doing it that way. And speaking of, you know, games that we've bought and haven't played yet. 2010, we're about halfway through. I know technically we probably should have done this 20 days ago. But, you know, guys, I'd like your thoughts. Three questions, three simple questions, a trilogy of questions. 2010, start with you, John. Best game of the first half of 2010. Go.
Oh, good. You're actually going to make me do this.
Yep. Go.
Oh, God. See, I know what everyone else is going to say, so I'll... the hell with it. I'm going with Darksiders.
Oh.
Mm. I like Darksiders. Darksiders was pretty cool. That's, I mean, that's actually an inspired choice.
Darksiders is what I've been wanting another game developer to do for years, and that's rip off Legend of Zelda.
And World of Warcraft.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, what I've actually wanted, I wanted a developer who wasn't Nintendo to make Legend of Zelda. Make me a Legend of Zelda game that doesn't use a chiptune soundtrack or, you know, actually has some voice acting in it and, attempts to tell the story.
And has dungeons in the second half of the game that aren't ridiculously overlong and complex.
Doesn't have me playing with water switches for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Water switches.
I can dig it.
Don't take that as a knock against Zelda. I still love my Zelda.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I mean, we
But
do
you're,
not...
you're never going to see Link smash an enemy's head with his giant oversized metal gauntlet.
And you'll never see him rip the wings off an angel, then impale him on a sword, then fling him over his shoulder into the ground.
While drinking his souls out of his body as they fall out.
Yeah, see, there you go. This is why Darksiders is so awesome.
Darksiders is the first time since Legacy of Kain that a developer has succeeded at doing this.
Number two. Ready? What game for the rest?
I'm going to do all three of them first?
I'm hitting you with all three.
Oh, God. It's...
Number
oh.
two. Which game for the rest of the year are you looking forward to the most?
Okay, see, I've already gone into depth on other podcasts about Dead Space 2 and Vanquish and how awesome they look, so I'm going to go with the title I saw earlier in the week that blew my mind in the fact that I'd never heard of it before, and it looks like the greatest thing ever. And if it's not coming out on PS3, it might be reason for me to go out and buy a 360 again. That's a game called Captain Blood.
Ah, oh, yes, Captain Blood.
Captain Blood looks like a steampunk pirate game where, you know, kind of like in the vein of God of War, hopefully without being as pants-crappingly disappointing as God of War 3 turned out to be.
Oh, those are strong words.
Dave Johnson is sharpening his blades of chaos right now.
I think, you know, Dave would probably agree with you.
Yeah?
If that game made you poop your pants, I think I would have read about it on the internet by now. Come on.
I'm thinking too, yeah.
But Captain Blood, you play as this big, muscular, manly man pirate who rapid fires his wheel lock Gatling gun ridiculous pistol from the hip and stabs guys with a giant claymore rapier. And then you've got a second playable character who looks like the guy who mans the crow's nest, and he has a spring-loaded sword on one arm. You know, this it looks totally awesome. And I know you guys are probably going to bring up the fact that it's, you know, being produced by a Russian developer that I've never heard of, and I'm just going to hope and pray that it's not the developer of X-Blades.
Who has the coolest name ever? Seawolf. The developer is called Seawolf.
That probably hasn't been heard of. That's a word that hasn't been spoken since World War II.
Dude, it sounds like the name of like an 80s television show about some kind of super tricked out machine, you know?
Yeah, it's the nautical
to a cop who fights crime.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh.
Mike Post should definitely do the theme music for that TV show.
I don't know. I'm definitely interested in what I've seen of it, but the pedigree ain't exactly instilling me with a lot of confidence.
I just wanted to talk about something different.
I understand. But, you know, Seawolf and who were the publisher? Like 1C Studios? I've never heard of these people. That doesn't work well.
Captain Blood has 1C in it.
Yes, it does. Captain Blood is also the Errol Flynn movie that Sloth was watching in Goonies, wasn't it?
I gotta buy myself a Superman T-shirt and a Baby Ruth for one.
I think, man, if I were gonna make a Captain Blood video game, it would be a side scroller all in black and white, and I'd have Sloth's shadow MST3K'd right into the front of the game, and just, you know, every time you kill someone or whatever, you hear him going like, ah!
Ah! whenever you finish a level, it changes the channel. To the cooking show when they're making a chocolate cake.
Yeah. Oh, chocolate. You know, there you go. See, brilliance. Why are we not game designers?
Xbox Summer of Arcade. Here we go. 2012. What's question three?
Question three. Most underrated or overlooked game you've seen in the first half of 2010. You know, we're into the slow months. There's not a lot coming out. What can people use to pass the time that they might not have played?
So we're talking about something that, like, didn't sell crazy well or something that wasn't a AAA title.
You know, we're basically talking about one of the many games that fell through the cracks. Even the so-called AAA games, there were a few of those, man, that just hit and vanished. And there was a lot of that this year. I found, like, more than any other year I can remember, man, there were a ton of games came out that just vanished as soon as they were released.
Well, that's because Red Dead ET'd the first half of the year.
Well, I mean, you had your Mass Effect 2, you had your Splinter Cell Conviction, and you had your Red Dead Redemption, and then there was everything else. Even God of War 3, man, just kind of, like, you know, it was a little blip on the radar for a while, and then, boop, gone.
Yeah, I was wondering what happened there, because I went down south for my wedding, and God of War 3 was released, and when I came back, I just figured nobody was talking about it anymore, because it had been out for a week.
Well, no, it vanished. It came and it went.
But back on subject, I'd say for me, the one I've had the most fun with that not a lot of people have probably picked up was Split Second from BlackRock Studios.
I enjoyed Split Second. Yeah.
Split Second, to me, that's the most fun I've had with a racing game since Burnout 3. I thought it was more fun than Burnout Paradise, which just shows to tell you that, you know, throwing a crashing plane and a whole ton of explosions into a racing game, recipe for greatness. Awesome. Two thumbs up. You can't hear the glint going off my smile when I say that.
I thought it looked really pretty.
If you haven't given it a try yet, by all means, pick it up for a rental. I rented it to review it, and when I was finished my one day rental, I bought it about 20 minutes after that.
Right on.
Loving it. You know, all three of the car manufacturers are named after action movie icons. Well, not really action movie icons, because it's like lower tier action movie things. You got the European car manufacturer is Cobretti.
Oh,
the,
man.
The American is Rybek, and the Japanese one is Hanzo.
That's, wow. So we got Hanzo is more a historical thing, but we got Casey Rybek from Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
And Marion Cobretti from Cobra.
Yeah, I think they should have called the Japanese one Chiba.
Bonus points to whoever can tell us what movies Casey Rybek and Marion Cobretti are from without Googling or IMDBing it. So, you know, we'll leave it out there. We don't actually have any real prizes, but, you know, hey, you get the satisfaction of saying, you know. And then you get us making fun of you on the next podcast.
Cold as ice.
Adam, how about you? Number one. Best game so far, 2010.
Best game so far, 2010. I think it's going to be Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, I can get behind that one.
Yeah. I've had more fun playing that than any game in recent memory.
It is a fantastic game.
It's Grand Theft Equine. It's great.
You get to steal horses.
You do get to steal horses, and they're a lot of fun. My favorite part about them is when they decide to die while I'm being chased.
And they tend to go flying
off of them.
You generally tend to go airborne, yeah.
Man, I remember the first time my horse died, and I don't know whether it was shot or it get full speed, and I just it was like a yard sale in skiing. We just went flying in all directions. And I basically threw the guy over my shoulder and ran back to town with the equivalent of like 5 miles.
I loved you know, how authentic the whole Wild Western feel of it was. You know, all the dialogue, all the characters and stuff, the way they treated women, you know, the whole making fun of the suffrage movement, and it was awesome.
game's a lot of fun. It's just all around excellent.
I love that you could rope up a prostitute and pull her through town on your horse, and no one would even bat an eyelash at it, but if you hit a pedestrian, the entire might of the law came crashing down on you like a hammer.
Just like in real life.
Just like in real life.
Yeah, that's my pick for sure.
That's your pick for best game 2010?
Yes, sir.
What do you think is going to be the one that you want the most for the rest of 2010?
The rest of 2010.
Yeah. Between now and December 31st, which game are you most looking forward to?
I guess it's not fair to pick one that doesn't have a firm release date.
No, you can't pick Diablo 3.
Come on. I want to pick Diablo
3. No, like I said, man, 2014.
Oh,
we're on Blizzard.
It's supposed to be this year. But
it's not going to be this.
Hello, friend. Wait a while and listen.
I've been doing that, Deckard Cain, for many years. But that's what I want for Christmas, Diablo 3.
I mean, you know, if they announce it, if they say Diablo 3 Christmas this year, not only will I be stunned and shocked, but, you know, I would be also very, very, very happy.
Can you imagine if they pulled it off for this year? How much money Blizzard's going to make this year?
I can't see them, like, they've always been
actually,
the type to spread things out.
I think if they did that, they'd actually cost themselves some money.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't see them doing it so close to StarCraft II and with Cataclysm right around the corner.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they always were the kind of go. They kind of work like Nintendo. They like to space things out a little bit.
They do.
Yeah.
All right. Failing that, then, Cataclysm's tempting, but I think I'm going to go with the Metroid game.
Metroid Other M?
Metroid Other M.
It does look pretty awesome.
It looks excellent. And Metroid is a franchise that I haven't played Metroid. I've played the original Metroid. I've played Super Metroid many, many, many times. But I don't have a passionate love for the franchise like some people do.
Yeah, I'm, you know, like with me, my love of Metroid pretty much begins and ends with Super Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the contrarian douchebags when Metroid Prime came out. I know everybody was gushing and going mad over Metroid Prime. And my attitude about it was, you know, if you're going to make a first-person shooter, just make a first-person shooter. Don't have me using shoulder buttons to look up and down. And, you know, like, I thought the game mechanics in the game were needlessly complex. And, you know, it didn't have that creepy vibe that, the like, Super Metroid had. It was just, I don't know, I was not a fan.
Yeah. You know what, you and I, we agree.
It's been known to happen from time to time.
It has been known to happen. We do drink the same contaminated water in Canada, so.
This is true.
Yeah. But this new one's looking pretty nice.
I'm just
very, very exciting.
I mean, like I said, I think we were talking about the E3. It was one of the E3 podcasts. As soon as I heard, like, the Super Metroid music playing in that trailer, I knew I had to have it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I had that feeling that, yeah, this is going to be an awesome game.
It's going to be an awesome game. So that's going to be my pick.
How about Overlooked Gem for the first half of 2010? What can people, you know, hey, maybe it's already dropped in price. Maybe it's dirt cheap now. And, you know, it came out the first half of this year, and it's something that people really should have played.
I'm going to pick a Wii game.
Okay.
It's Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
All right, yeah, okay.
That game was a barrel of laughs, and I still have no idea if I... Like, there's nothing like a fighting game where you play it for 30 seconds and you're not sure if you've won the match.
I didn't know lights. What was going on. I know there was a title screen, and I know an announcer went, Capcom versus Tatsunoko!
And it's just flashing and flashing.
Yeah.
There was an 85 million hit combo, and all of a sudden this gigantic man made out of gold jumped all over the screen, and next thing I know it was like KO, and I'm like, wait, what just happened?
All I know is John came over, he put it in the system, and there was a lot of flashing lights, and I awoke, and there was so much blood.
I smelled burnt toast, and it was terrible.
When I opened my mouth, fingers came out.
But you know what? It's because I can't say in 2010 Marvel vs. Capcom 3, because I know that's 2011 at this point.
Oh, okay.
Which is unfortunate. Tetsunoko vs. Capcom is the closest you're going to get to that kind of just crazy over the top fighting game that just completely gives the finger to game mechanics and skill, and you know, it just says mash the button and spin it and you'll do a 900 hit combo.
It is essentially the polar opposite of Street Fighter 4. You know, like Street Fighter 4, they took the formula and they refined it to infinite perfection, you know, but with Tatsunoko they took the formula and just
added more sugar.
Yeah.
Yes. But you know, it's just so, there's just so much of it that it's like watching a bad movie. You know, it's the video game equivalent of a trauma film. It's so bad and over the top that it's glorious.
I almost thought you were going to say it was the video game equivalent of Judge Dredd, and then I have to buy a plane ticket and hurt you.
No. The video game equivalent of Judge Dredd is the Judge Dredd video game.
Come on.
That's right, I want
you,
that.
You is not the law. I didn't break the law. I am the law. Before we get on Steve's trilogy questions to himself, egotistical bastard, I was going to tell Adam and anyone else out there who's listening, if they haven't already done it, if you're looking forward to Marvel vs. Capcom 3, be sure to hop online and check out the new Comic-Con trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were some new characters and stuff announced, weren't there?
Yeah, like Deadpool's super move involves beating the opponent with his life bar. He takes his life bar from the top of the screen and beats them with it.
That's pretty cool. That is pretty fantastic.
They've captured the spirit of the character.
I like the breaking of the fourth wall there too. That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, they just announced there's some new characters that just popped up today, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they announced on the Marvel side, Doctor Doom and the Super Skrull. I can hear Steve groaning right now.
Oh, God. Oh.
And Capcom, of course, gets the short end of the stick again, and we get, oh, God, who is it? Trish from Devil May Cry.
Yep.
Some scantily clad bitch from some game from the like early 2000s.
Yeah.
And Chun-Li, I think.
Oh, yes, Chun-Li.
Well, I ain't talking no smack about Chun-Li.
No, I honestly think Chun-Li could kick Dr. Doom's ass.
Yeah. And I think it'd be awesome if whenever you beat Dr. Doom, he shouts, Richards!
But you know what? Chun-Li's a cop-out. Announcing Chun-Li's in your game is like announcing that it's going to be on the PlayStation 3.
Or like announcing that it's going to be a fighting game.
Yes.
With the word that versus it's... in the title.
Or announcing its MSRP. It's really not going to be a surprise.
No.
It's just...
Yeah,
it's...
I want Capcom to reach back a little bit further and like bring back Captain Commando.
No.
Or hell, put Bionic Commando in it.
At least give us Bionic characters that Commando. We'll recognize, man.
Hey, Captain Commando was one of the most excellent beat-em-ups of the Capcom age.
Thanks for buying our game. That's all I remember about Captain Commando in every NES booklet when you flip it open.
It was self-congratulatory. It was great. I mean, one of the characters was a baby in a mechanized suit, and he basically filled the role of Mayor Hagar. He did spinning pile drivers. It was a baby in a robotic suit. It was a baby in a robotic suit. The game was great. It was just, it didn't make any sense. It was just pure rejiggling of Final Fight sprites.
Well, wasn't everything that Capcom made in that time period?
Yeah.
They basically, they I think they used a new version of their arcade hardware for I think it might have been Knights of the Round, and then
That was
everything.
freaking.
Oh, it was, yeah, but everything after that just used that exact same game engine with some sprite swapping.
But again, comfortable, familiar.
True, true. I'm going to answer my own three questions. I'm not going to ask them. I'm just going to answer them. Number one, I got to go with Adam and pick Red Dead Redemption.
Woohoo!
Just because it is so much fun to drag prostitutes around while riding your horse. It's an awesome game just for that reason alone. I wish I could do it in real life. No, I don't. I don't mean that.
The only thing Red Dead Redemption is missing from Grand Theft Auto is Esperante.
Yeah, Radio Esperante is not there, but I'll live. I'll survive. But no, it's just, I mean, it was the first game this year that I picked it up and the controller would not leave my hand until it was done. Like there were no deviations. There wasn't any point where, oh, this came out, so Red Dead Redemption has to go on the shelf until I'm done with this game. Like it was like a lot like Oblivion and Fallout 3 were with me. I started playing it and I couldn't even think about playing anything else until it was finished.
I got fired from my job. I
Yeah,
lost 30 pounds.
yeah,
It was terrible.
Child Protective Services came and took my children.
I
I
put the
still
game in
don't
the
know where my
system,
wife
and I
is.
swear to God, John Marston put a gun to the back of my head and made me play all night. And when I woke the next day, I slept for like 2 hours, and I had to steel myself because I knew John Marston was coming again.
But no,
But
it
John
was just
Marston's actually very nice in the game, that's the thing.
he is, and that's another thing. He was such a likable protagonist, and all the characters in the game were so well realized. Like there were so many cool characters in that game that you just, there were times when the characters left and you knew like they were kind of exiting the game, and I was just kind of like, huh. It was that first scene when you land in Mexico and
Dude,
Iris.
landing in Mexico.
Yeah, you get
I
off.
would give it
the vote of game of the year just for the whole landing in Mexico.
Yeah. I mean, it's the middle of the night. Your last friend says goodbye, and this somber acoustic song with some guy singing over it starts playing while you're just roaming across the plain. And it's one of those, like one of those moments where you're playing a game and you're like, nah, this is the shit right here. This is. This is how you tell a story in a video game. This is how it's done. This is how you get yourself, like you get your player emotionally attached to a character,
Yep.
And that ending, man, that ending was soul crushing and awesome at the same time. It was just such a great game. I can't like, yeah. I mean, in terms of best of 2010, there it is, and I'd say probably, one of the most memorable games to come along for a while. I don't see anything coming out anytime soon that's going to trump it.
So there we go, the heavyweight contender for best of 2010 crowned towards the end of the year.
Yeah, oh, easily. If Red Dead Redemption doesn't win, best game of 2010, there's something seriously wrong. I mean, Mass Effect 2 is amazing, and it's definitely my runner-up. It's definitely my number two, but it even that pales in comparison to Red Dead Redemption. It's just it was a phenomenal piece of work. It was absolutely crazy. In terms of what I'm looking forward to, I'm going to give it to a PC game. I'm going to follow in. Well, no, technically, I guess I'm not really following in Adam's shoes. But I'm going to give it to Final Fantasy 14. I mean, I played the hell out of Final Fantasy 11. It was, the best of times. It was the worst of times. But at the same time, it was something I enjoyed. So 14, they're doing some stuff that really looks like it's they're actually, thinking outside the box as far as MMO design is concerned. It looks like they're really putting together a game that's going to be a lot of fun to play, and I'm really looking forward to it. And if the social side of it can take off like FF11 did, it's going to be a great little video game world to lose some of my life in,
Great.
And
Fantastic.
in terms of the last one, in terms of something that I recommend, I'm going to go with White Knight Chronicles, which is another RPG with a pretty sturdy online component to it for PlayStation 3. But it's a game that I think might have sold about 500,000 copies total worldwide, and it's that which is a total injustice. I mean, this is a game that if it had come out in the PlayStation 2 era would be heralded as like the greatest RPG of all time. It's fantastic game design. It's not really what I'd call innovative, I guess, but at the same time, like what's there, it works, it makes sense. it's a solid system. It's easy to learn, but there's a lot of depth to it, so that, you know, you can experiment quite a bit with your characters. It's got a great single player storyline. It's got a lot of really cool like art design is great. The character designs are great, and the online component is awesome. The online component is you know, something entirely independent to the single player game, and there are hundreds upon hundreds of quests that you can, you know, you can just hop online, team up with a few buddies, and hit these huge regions and go to town. It's a fantastic, really well executed game, and I know there's already a sequel been released in Japan that I'm sure they're going to end up bringing over here, but and even talk of a PSP version. So I'm hoping that, you know, eventually it does catch on and gets, you know, the props that it deserves. It's a fantastic little game, and it's a great way, especially this time of year when you got nothing else to be at other than reactivate your WoW account. It's a good way to waste a bit of time. It's just a good, you know, distraction. Or if you're like me and you're trying to finish Mass Effect 2, I guess. But yeah, there it is. That's my three.
Very good.
Well said.
With that, we'll let you brave listeners who managed to hang around with us for this long be on your merry way. You've been listening to Blast Processing. If you got any feedback, feel free to leave it on our site. There's an email address there that I'm pretty sure does work. You can get us over in the DVD Verdict forums, over in the jury room. We've got our own little subsection over there where we are starting to talk a little more and more about video games and that sort of thing. And we'd love to see you. Stop on by, have a chat. We're gone. We'll catch you next week.